Hi, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of ECC Insiders. I'm Joel Depker.
And I'm Lee Cold.
Today, we're talking about an important ballot issue that's going to the voters in the ECC taxing district on April 2nd of 2024. That's critical to the operations and the future of the college. Important to talk about this, so we've asked Dr. John Bauer, ECC president, to join us. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to talking about Proposition ECC.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Bauer. Would you mind just starting and giving kind of an overview of what this proposition is?
Sure. Proposition ECC really boils down to this. We're asking voters to approve a transfer in our tax levy. No overall increase, but changing the way it's divided from where we are now, where we have a portion of the levy that pays for operating costs and a portion that pays for bonds that have been used for our buildings. And we're just asking voters to make a transfer so it's all in operations so that we can take care of our facilities and other operational needs on campus and really position the college where it needs to be for the next many years.
So the first question some would ask is, given this new money into operations, what will this money be used for and how much are we talking?
Well, eventually the levy would generate a little bit more than $2 million a year coming into our operating fund. So put that into perspective. That's about a 10% increase in our operating revenue from where we are right now, about 10%. And we would use that to address aging buildings. We have buildings here of various ages going back to the early 1970s, some more recent than that. All of them need just the kind of upkeep you would expect at your own home, roofs and HVAC equipment and other improvements, just maintenance and repair in those buildings. We would take care of that. Our roads and our parking lots need a lot of attention. We would take care of those kinds of cost on the physical plant, the campus of the college, the buildings located here. We would also look at the space we have and determine how can we best use that space. You know, throughout the history of the college, there was always a need for another building. I'm going all the way back to the 60s when we needed to build the campus and get it started. And then throughout our history, there's always been a need for some new facility. Like many colleges, right now, we probably have the square footage we need at the main campus in total. But not every space on campus is utilized as well as it could be utilized to its highest potential. So we would look at some improvements on campus as well, not just maintaining and repairing the facilities pretty much as they are, but looking at space and transforming it. For example, we see our early college academy growing. We now have six high schools participating. We know that's going to grow in the future. Where can we create a space, kind of a landing space, a homeroom for those students when they're not in class where they can gather and work on campus? We don't have space like that now, so looking at existing space and creating it. We need a space for our STEM majors to work, a good lab space for them. Our chemistry labs, biology labs, those are really state-of-the-art and service very well. We don't have the best space for those students interested in things like physics or pre-engineering. So creating space for those students. We would renovate some space we have dedicated for veterans, for example. And there would be other improvements like that, looking at space we have and moving it to its highest and best use. So that would be a good chunk of the funds that would come in. Operating costs continue to go up like anybody else. We see our utility costs continuing to increase. We have a challenge as an employer, just being able to be competitive in the workplace and making sure that we can hire top-notch faculty and keep faculty and staff that we have here. And that becomes an increasing challenge as well. And that's a big part of our operating expenses. So, without increasing the overall levy by transferring the amount that's now used to retire a small amount of debt that we have left for the next couple of years, putting that into operations, we would be able to address these issues and do it in a very responsible way. And I think we've been clear to voters, you know, as we're talking about the kinds of things that would happen on campus, the kinds of things that we would do with these funds. I think we are also really good about talking about the record we have and the work that we've done over many years. We want to continue to do that for students in the future.
You know, a couple of other things I know that are going to be used, this money will be used for, is safety and security on the campus. Talk about the details of that and really trying to limit those drastic student tuition increases. Not to say that tuition will never be increased, but to eliminate or really not have those big swings. But first, we'll talk about safety and security on the Union campus.
Well, it's something that we pay a lot of attention to, and we've taken a lot of steps over the past many years. We have Union police officers who are staffed on our campus every day and night. We have established a substation for the Union Police Department to have kind of a base of operations on our campus. We've improved our exterior locks. We've improved our security cameras and lighting, but that work is never done. We don't want any space on campus to be substandard when it comes to things like lighting or to have cameras in place so if something happens, you know, we have a way of determining what it was or who might be responsible. We'll continue to look at building security. It's just a different world. We know that that is something that we have to pay attention to. We want the safest environment for our students, and that comes at a cost. And even work that we've already done over time, you know, has to be replaced. It has to be maintained. So we will take those steps to make sure we have the safest campus on for students. And the funds would be helpful, very helpful in doing that. In terms of mitigating and limiting the tuition increases, if you can just visualize a three-legged stool, that really describes in many respects the funds that we have coming into the college. We have three primary sources of revenue, tuition and fees being one of those legs of the stool, and students certainly pay their share. They're paying nearly 39% of the revenue that comes in for operations right now. State aid is another leg of that stool. And historically, that has been, especially in recent years, that's been the shortest leg of the stool because over time, over 20, 25 years, state support for colleges like East Central has not kept pace with rising costs. And so it is increasingly a smaller share of the revenue. And then the third leg in that stool is our local tax base, and that's what this levy would address. And that historically has been about a third of the revenue that's coming in. So, again, think of a three-legged stool and the revenue that we receive. About one-third of that comes from the tax base. Students are paying much more than that, 38-39%, and the state's paying a smaller share. Over time, we've just had to adjust our budget accordingly. But the one thing that we have direct control over is where we set tuition. There are some limits there. We want our programs and services to be accessible. We want East Central to continue to be affordable. That's why we were established to begin with, and we never want to lose sight of our mission of having an open door. In other words, barriers, whether it's cost or other things, we don't want barriers to students. We want them to be able to come here. But we also need to be mindful that we can't continue to just increase tuition to keep pace with these rising costs, because at some point, as affordable as we are relative to other colleges and universities and other sectors of higher education, we're too expensive for some students, regardless of the assistance they may get. So we're very mindful, and we try to limit those increases. This will allow us to go even further with that and really move us back to a point where we know that the cost to a student is affordable. And that's where we need to be. If we're going to serve all the students in our region the way we want to, we need to make sure we're the affordable choice in addition to the high quality and the types of programs that we have that are responsive to the needs in the area.
And I think if listeners are interested, I think it certainly kind of bears some research in terms of the state aid leg of the stool and how drastically that has shifted over the last few decades. And that changes things. And now we're talking about, of course, the leg of the stool of local taxpayers. And I think that you'd be hard-pressed to find someone in this area whose life hasn't been touched by ECC in some way. But even if you do find someone whose life has not been touched by ECC, the reality that investing in education, in public education, of course, K-12, but also higher education, is good for everyone in a community. And once again, you can do a deeper dive into this research, but better health outcomes, better incomes, obviously, more citizen engagement, more civic engagement. An investment in higher education is an investment in an entire community. And yeah, I think that just consistently thinking about the value of that beyond just dollars and cents is really important.
There's no question. We're central to the economic and social vitality of our region. And, you know, sometimes we take it for granted because for most of us, East Central has always been around. But there are only 12 of us around the state. It's not that every community in the state has a community college at its center. And especially one with the record that we have of you know, high quality programs, services that meet our students' needs, and knowing that the students not only come from this region, but they tend to stay in this region. So they are contributing to the vitality of the region in so many ways. Some will go elsewhere. There's no question. That's just natural. But by and large, our students not only come to us from the region, but they stay and work in the region. So it really is an investment in ourselves. You know, it has been challenging with state aid over time. So what have we done? We've tightened our budgets many times. Sometimes that happens midstream. You think, you know, your budget is set and then that changes unexpectedly. And so you have to adjust accordingly. We continue to tighten our belt. We do have a lean budget. No question about that. And over time, we have continued to tighten that up. But we also have to be mindful of what do we have to offer students? We don't want to, and to the community. There's a point at which that you continue to tighten that you're just not able to offer everything that you think the community needs, that students say that they need and want. And, you know, I don't want to be in a position where there are those gaps, that there are needs that we simply can't address. So I feel good about where we've looked on the expense side of things. It hasn't been easy, but we've managed to do that. But we're at a point in time here in the next couple of years where we have an opportunity to shore up that leg of the stool that's represented by the tax base, and we can do it in a way that doesn't increase the overall rate for taxpayers. So nearly 20 years ago, we don't come on the ballot very often. It's been almost 20 years. 2006, we went to voters and made the case that what we needed on our campus, and this was a time when we needed a new building, we needed a facility to house our nursing program, to house our EMT paramedic program, and to provide updated state-of-the-art labs for students in all of our programs. The labs were in the original building on campus and really hadn't been significantly updated since that time. Voters approved, overwhelmingly approved, and as a result, bonds were issued. We built our health science building. And we're nearly to the end of retiring those bonds. That's why we have this opportunity. In 2026, those bonds would be retired, and the portion of our debt portion of our tax levy that's called the debt service levy that pays off those bonds will either go away or, if voters approve, would be transferred into operations. And that's why that overall levy, that overall tax levy for the college would remain the same, but instead of being divided into two portions, one for operations, one for debt, we would roll all of that into operations and be able to meet the things that I described previously.
So being contrary for effect, people who are questioning this, detractors, I'll say, would look at a couple of things. One being, I think the key thing is the enrollment in community colleges in the state and the country has gone down over the past 10 years for various reasons. So why do you need more money when you're servicing less students? So we'll start with that. And I know there's some economies of scale there, but get into the rationale of why that matters, but to not to all things with the budget.
Well, we have certainly seen enrollment fluctuate over time, but I think the other thing that has happened is we've seen our mission grow over time as well. So we'll often look at enrollment, and those are students in our credit-bearing programs, and are we up or down over the previous year? And to a large degree, that's a function of things. That's a function of demographics, of course. It could be a function of the unemployment situation. Are people somewhat able to go to work and make a living wage without additional credentials beyond high school, beyond what they currently have in their portfolio? What are the economic circumstances? Are more and more families looking for that opportunity to save money, especially for those transfer students on the front end? So there are all kinds of reasons why enrollment may fluctuate. But one thing that we have seen is the cost of the programs we offer continues to get more expensive. Technology is part of that. We're offering programs that are related to career and technical fields that can be very expensive. If we want someone, for example, in our region, there are a lot of machine tool shops that support aerospace, automotive, and other manufacturing. If we want students who are learning in an environment that's going to be similar to where they'll be working when they leave East Central, then we need to have that equipment that's in place. Same thing with healthcare. We want our students who are going into health careers to train and learn in labs and with equipment and facilities and with quality faculty who position them very well to go into the workplace full-time in healthcare. And you can just say that across the board. The other area that we've seen a lot of growth is in our non-credit work, our workforce programs, which is now kind of the third dimension of a comprehensive community college. And those programs also come with costs. So if we're going to be responsive to our community, and a big part of that is being responsive to employers in the community, we need to offer relevant programs. So when we talk about a comprehensive community college, which East Central is, that means that we're serving students who are looking to transfer. Sometimes you'll hear the old junior college model described there. So the first 2 years of a baccalaureate or a bachelor's degree, that's one part of our mission. The career and technical side, the programs, nursing is a good example. After 2 years at East Central, you complete our program, you're heading right into the workforce. And then the third element is the area in workforce development. If we're really going to meet all of those needs, it takes resources to do that. And that's where we found ourselves. Our costs are rising much more quickly than the revenue available.
You know, Lee touched on it earlier, but I just want to come back to it, the public good for a community college, but specifically the people that are looking at the college as, well, I've never attended that college. I don't have kids who attended that college. So what is the inherent value for me as a taxpayer for East Central College when I feel like I'm not reaping the rewards from what I'm paying?
There's a classic question in higher ed, and not to get too wonky on it, because it's actually a pretty simple yet profound question. And when it comes to funding higher education, the question is this: who benefits and who pays? Certainly the students benefit, and students also pay. So you can look at it nearly as a transaction. A student comes to us, wants a particular credential, wants a path to a particular career, pays tuition and fees, and may have help doing that, but that individual benefits. There's no question about that. But the public also benefits, and that's why we have a system of public education. And I'm talking very broadly now, from pre-K all the way through college, because we recognize that the system of public higher education not only has an individual benefit, a personal benefit for the student, but there is a public benefit. Our community is richer and more vital because of the work that we do here in higher education, or specifically the work we do at East Central College. The level of educational attainment is higher. The responsiveness to our workforce is stronger and more robust, meaning those companies can stay competitive and continue to employ and people in the region and grow. And so it's true that we contribute to the economic well-being of an entire region beyond just those individuals who are enrolled with us. And as I said before, students clearly are paying their share, and they have the longest leg of that three-legged stool. But there's no question about that, and that wouldn't change even with this with the passage of Prop ECC. That wouldn't change. Students still have a very significant stake in the work that we do here. But the public also benefits. And, you know, we decided collectively in 1968, we went to the polls, and some of us were around, but I mean, our community went to the polls and said, this is important to us. Creation of what was then called the Junior College District of East Central Missouri, or East Central Junior College, ECJC. This is important to us. We decided as a community that was true, and that's why we're one of those 12 around the state. I think that was a an exceedingly impactful decision for our region. And where would we be? If you look back 55 years, where would this region be without East Central in the middle? It would be clearly different than what we are today and who we are today. So we want to continue to do that. So that's the public good. Companies looking to locate in this region want to know what's available workforce. What do you have in terms of training? What's the community like? When you look at employers like our healthcare providers, they're absolutely dependent on what we can do in terms of providing graduates who are heading into those fields. We all benefit from that. So whether you've ever attended East Central or anybody in your family has attended East Central, let's just say for the moment, no one that you know in your immediate sphere has ever attended here. Chances are you've been to, you've received healthcare and probably from a nurse that who has been through our program, or maybe you've been in an ambulance and you received care from an EMT paramedic who came from our program. And those are just a couple of specific examples. And the fact that we have such a robust and diverse economy, which wasn't always true. You go back decades, we were very much focused in one or two industries, including the shoe industry, for example. And when that went away, then our economy really suffered. Well, now we have a diverse, very comprehensive employment sector in our region, which is to our benefit, but it only happens because of the role East Central plays in our economic well-being. So certainly a personal good, but there's also a public good too. And that's kind of the compact that we've made as a community. We're going to pay a portion. Students are going to pay a portion. The state benefits. State's paying a portion. And then together, we have something that's really powerful.
And I think in terms of local workforce too, something I've been thinking about increasingly is just what the future will hold in terms of remote work and what that will mean to our community in terms of making sure that, of course, we have those educational opportunities available, but also who might elect to live here and why, because they will have more flexibility with their profession, whatever it might be. So the future is, a lot is unknown, but a lot we can kind of see things happening, and just the necessity of this kind of core educational institution at the center is just so important. And I think also so much of what you're talking about, the costs of capital, the tangible things that we know, but also for the general education courses, mm-hmm. all of the benefits for our students who choose a community college, lower class sizes, full-time faculty ratio, like all of these things are such a benefit to the student experience. Again, not necessarily as flashy or tangible as some of the things that need updating, but yeah, just so important to kind of help.
No, it's critically important. The quality of life in our region is very important. And frankly, to take advantage of other decisions that we have made, again, as a community or even as a state. You know, there's a lot of discussion now about, how could community college be structured to make it even more accessible? This is kind of a national discussion. Missouri doesn't get a lot of credit for decisions made in the 1990s to create programs like the A-plus program, which many families know. Well, the student coming out of high school has the A-plus benefit, meaning that the tuition and fees are going to be funded by the state. So this is a decision we've made in Missouri that this is important to our to our state and our population. We want to provide this opportunity. That opportunity is only as good as the preparation and the education that those students receive. And so when we talk about the work that goes on at East Central, we are talking about the student who comes into a classroom that is much smaller than would be the case elsewhere, meaning they're going to get much more attention from the faculty member. We're also talking about faculty members who have spent years in the classroom, experienced at teaching, experienced at working with students. So now you have the combination of great experience, great credentials, great expertise in the classroom, and a situation where that faculty member has the ability to work closely with students, that student can't help but then be prepared for what comes next, the transfer student, for example, and it bears out. I mean, the data just bear this out. When they transfer, our students at the University of Missouri have A averages when they transfer. That doesn't happen accidentally. That happens because they have a very solid foundation. Students who transfer from here and go to Missouri S&T, for example, to be engineers, find themselves ahead of where some of the students who started as freshmen at that campus find themselves as juniors. We know that's true in the fine arts. Students who leave here, music students who leave here and transfer elsewhere, find themselves well ahead of where some of the students are. That's all a credit to the quality of the work. So we talk a lot about accessibility. No question, that's an important part of our mission, but accessibility doesn't cut it in and of itself if there's also not great quality. And I take a lot of pride that we have both of those things at East Central College.
East Central College being the community's college, I think it's also an important point to make that this decision to go to the voters on April 2nd for the transfer wasn't done in a vacuum by college leadership. You know, there was representation of individuals, eight of them, across the taxing district, and that occurred starting in June of 2023. I think it's important to mention that because it's not just done, you know, behind closed doors on the campus. There is some reaching out by leadership to community leaders.
No question. We are very much the community's college. So we're governed by a board of trustees that's locally elected. In other states, that's not the case. But here, the individuals, the six individuals who serve as trustees and govern the institution are there because their constituents, our neighbors in the community have sent them here to do that work, to serve as trustees, unpaid roles. But they have the heart of the college and the best interest of the college, you know, as job one. When this issue came up and we explored options with the Board of Trustees, the administration, my administrative team and I and the Board of Trustees, and we looked at these options as far as the tax levy coming up in a couple of years, the board, even though they're locally elected and represent our district, wanted to test the pulse and get the input of the community even beyond that. So a committee was formed that was representative of our taxing district, a representation from each of the large communities within the college district. And we spent the summer meeting with that group, outlining here are the challenges we have. Here are our finances. Open the books. Let them look at our finances, how the revenue comes in, how the funds are spent. And at the conclusion of that period of time over the summer into early fall, then the committee made a recommendation to the Board of Trustees that the board considers putting this issue on the April ballot. That was followed then by the administration's recommendation, my recommendation to the board, which concurred with that this was an opportunity that we needed to present to voters. The board took both of those things in consideration and then decided to agreed with those recommendations and placed it on the ballot. So it very much is a homegrown, organic proposal that is being presented to voters. And, I mentioned when we were formed in 1968 and then, you know, buildings that have been, the campus as it's been developed, the buildings that have been constructed here, the work that we've done, all of that happens because the voters in the area say so, their representatives provide the direction, and the administrative approval, you know, through the course of these 55 some odd years. We are very much the community's college, and we are accountable to the public as we are here. I think with this proposal, you know, we need to demonstrate here's the work that we've done, but also here's what we plan to do. If you agree with this proposal, this is how it will affect your college going forward.
The contrary thought is, well, I'm going to save money if I vote no. I'm going to have a tax savings if I vote no because you'll retire the debt service levy. But what's your opinion on that opinion?
And there's no question about that. So without any further action, if voters wouldn't approve, or if let's just say nothing was ever submitted, once the debt is paid on the health science building, and we do that in the form of bonds, general obligation bonds, if those are paid off, and there's no further action on the levy, then that levy would go away. And taxpayers would certainly see a savings, but I think it's important to quantify that. So for every $100,000 in market value, and in our district, the average home is has a value of a little over $200,000. But for every $100,000 of value, and you can just scale that, you know, as you wish to apply to your own home, the amount that we're talking about is just under $19 a year. So for that kind of average home, average value home in our community, in our district, you would double that, about $38 a year. So there's no question there would be a savings there, but there's also a great benefit if this proposition is approved. You know, there's no perfect analogy. And I think, you know, on the one hand, you could look at, well, you know, if you have a home and you pay that off, and at some point you pay off your mortgage. And that's true. That's where we are in terms of paying off those bonds. And, you know, when that mortgage payment goes away, then you would have a savings, obviously. And so that is a benefit to you. But, you know, your needs are still there. So sometimes we look at that home and we know we still have other needs. We have to continue to make improvements on that home. And I think that's important to remember. Sometimes I think it might even be, you know, more appropriate to think more of transportation and your vehicle. And so, you buy a car, and if you finance it, you have payments over a certain period of time. Well, when you pay that off, I mean, you still need transportation. Eventually that car is going to have to be replaced. Sometimes you may look at it as like, you know, I've got a budget that I've set aside for transportation. I really don't want to increase that budget, but I still need to have dependable wheels. And so you continue basically with that budget. That's kind of what's happening with this levy. The levy itself would remain the same. It wouldn't go down as it would if the bonds were retired, but it's also not going up. But we continue to service the needs that we have on campus. So I think that maybe that's a good way to look at it. You know, as I said, this is an investment in ourselves. So the funds that we would receive from this will continue to allow us to meet our mission in the way that we have for the last 55 years and will for the future.
And if folks want something tangible for that dollar amount, they can come to a free Falcon Athletics matchup, a movie, the art gallery. We offer so many things on campus that, you know, if you really want something tangible, you can absolutely make that happen. There's a pretty major Rolla building project happening. We're in the midst of that happening very, very soon. So if voters have any questions about how this is connected, if it's connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want it to be very clear on the ballot language, because we have this other major initiative for the college that's happening at the same time, but they're unrelated. So outside of our taxing district, we have had leased facilities in Rolla for a number of years, going back to the 1990s. And we've seen that, our work there continue to grow. And we're at the point now that we have funds that have been allocated separately from the local tax base, state and federal monies, to help us build a facility and move away from the leased facilities and having students in multiple locations and getting everything under one roof. But the coincidental part is that this work is happening at the same time that we have this issue on the ballot. So we were very clear with the ballot language, first of all. And if you're in the taxing district and you go to the polls on April 2nd, you will see that this is for, you know, on-campus operations. We've been very clear about that. At the same time, this is a very exciting development in the history of the college to be able to secure the state and federal resources, money for a new facility to get everything under one roof in Rolla is a significant development for the students in that area. And I think down the road could provide an opportunity for Rolla and some surrounding communities, if they're so inclined, to actually then formally become part of the East Central College District. I've said a couple of times, there's only 12 of us around the state, right? Well, if you would look at a map of the state and just put those campuses, you know, locate those, you would see that while we probably address most of the population centers in the state, there'd be a huge part of the landmass of the state that does not get served by a community college. For us, Rolla is the biggest community that fits that definition. So students don't pay local taxes, but they do pay a much higher rate of tuition as a result. In other words, the portion that would otherwise be paid in local taxes is made up by paying a higher rate of tuition. So that's what we call our out-of-district students. So they would continue to pay that higher rate of tuition. We would use these external resources from the state and federal government to acquire the facility, and we hope by 2027 open the doors to that. We'll continue to serve the students in that area, and we'll continue then at the same time to have the conversations with the community. This is what we can do with these resources. But if you want to be part of something larger and you want to formally be part of the taxing district itself and then continue to grow our operations, then this is the process for doing that. And voters could make the same decision that voters in the district made in 1968, and that is to become part of a junior college district at that time, now a community college district as we sit here in 2024.
Proposition ECC goes to the voters on April 2nd, which is the levy transfer is a zero increase, which requires a simple majority to pass, correct?
That's correct. 50% plus one vote. So we encourage people to become informed about the issue. There's information on our website, eastcentral.edu. You'll be hearing more and more about it in the coming weeks. We want voters to go to the polls on April 2nd. We want them to be informed, and we're looking forward to seeing how that turns out once the polls closed.
Dr. Bauer, president of East Central College, thank you for giving us the detail about Proposition ECC.
You're quite welcome.
Thanks for listening to ECC Insiders. A reminder to check out the show notes for more resources, including links to our website and our contact information.
Until next time, stay engaged and keep learning.